morning. Just allow me to acknowledge, first of all, for those who can hear me, Commissioner Petah, because this month is measured by given time, and it's difficult. Some say it's the best time to come because, you know, get out of the cleaning. But nonetheless, I'd like to come to you. I've prepared these summary sheets for those of you who follow, perhaps easier. The subject is obviously topical to Temachus. There's a wealth of information to say about Temachus. I asked Judy, I don't have to speak for, it's only 30 minutes. I said, 30 minutes, 10 pages, I'm just saying, where should I start? So we start on the 29th minute. So we'll try and keep it short. And one point that happened in each Makkah, I've specifically chosen those points where there's a difference or more than one Pirush on that particular Makkah. First Makkah, Makkah's done. We're told, Moshe and Aaron meet Paro at the Nile, and in front of Paro's eyes they change the Nile converted into blood. What's Paro's reaction to this? By even Paro turned away, by other Obeisei came home, but they shot him by Ganazoi, and they not pay any attention to this. I asked them for him, why is it relevant to us that Paro came home? But even Paro, by Yahweh, obeisei, but lo shasi v'gamazei. Just say Paro, lo shasi v'gamazei. He didn't pay any attention to the Makkah. It was on no concern to him. So Maral Liskin says that we have a principle that kishuf, magic, will only work on something that's in front of you. Something which is not in front of you is a kishuf. Paro has to change it. He says, now Paro came home, and Paro was claiming that this is not yet Hashem here. This has been done by magic. The sorcerers and the Egyptian sorcerers can do the same thing. And he comes home, and he sees at home there's blood, so that should have affected him. He should have said, what's going on here? This can't be Kishuf. But no, Paro is such a rasha that he's chosen by Hashem, but let's just see the gun of like, even when he came home and he saw the blood at home. The Mecca Chokmah takes a completely opposite explanation. And he says as follows. Now we know, there was one way, and one way only, which an Egyptian could obtain water. If he would pay a yid to buy the water off him, he would get water. If he would ask the Yid for money, for water, and he would give it to him and without paying, it wouldn't work. There's no other aid, so you had to pay the proper value, and the Yid became rich from this. Now, Paro raised Moshe Rabbeinu as a child in his palace. And he had not received any remuneration for bringing up Moshe in his house as a child, feeding him, clothing him, housing him all these years. So as it were, Paro was in credit with Moshe Rabbeinu. He was entitled to be reimbursed for all the expenditure. So Paro had already paid for his water. So when he came home and he turned on the tap, what came out was water. So he says, but even Paro, by Yahweh Obeisei, he came home to his house, turned on the tap, what came out? Water. Lo shasi v'gamazei. He says, the whole thing's a joke. Now I wish to make a point of my own here, and that is, one who reads the Meshach Chochmah might be led to think that the Meshach Chochmah is coming to justify or mitigate Paro's vicious and denying the Hashem's striking them and trying it. However, if you bear things in perspective, it would seem it's not the case. Makkah's Dam turned the Nile into blood. Now the Meshach tells us that as the river flew over the border, it actually changed from water into blood. But it tells us furthermore that the Egyptian people, their saliva actually turned into blood. They were spitting out blood. They tried to obtain fruit juice. They squeezed out oranges and blood came out. Their bottled water, their Evian, whatever it was, turned into blood. So they were facing a natural disaster on a level that's never seen before, creating of an order which is not natural. But Paro used to go home and say, the water's coming out in my house, that's water. It seems to be ridiculous. I think there's a recurring theme here which comes up time and time again in the Makkos, which I'll mention again by reference, and that is Paro wished to deny the Ribono Shel Olam. And therefore, any straw he saw, he grabbed it like a drowning man with both hands. So if he had a get out, in my house there's water, that was the path that he chose to take. Because of his willingness to deny the clarity of what was going on here, Therefore, he chose any possible get out. And I think this is the idea which we're going to see time and time again. The sorcerers did it when they did do the Makkos, when they could do the Makkos, they were obviously not on the same quality, they weren't able to get rid of the Makkos. Nonetheless, Paro chose to follow that. And when we mention this again. Following Makkos Tafadea, we are told as follows. Aaron stretched out his hands upon the waters of Egypt. And the frogs came out and covered the land of Mitzrayim. Now the word for Tfadea here is used in a singular term, which Rashi says is not difficult, because according to Pashat Peshat, Shroi Tat Tfadeim Kriya Lashon Yechidus. The swarming of frogs is referred to in the singular, and therefore would mean the swarming of frogs came out and covered the land of Mitzrayim. However, there's a difficulty here, because every other time in the parasha that the word Tfadea is used, it's used in the plural, Tfadeim. This is the one time that the word Tfadea is used in the singular Russian. So much so that even though Rashi, the great Pashtun that he is, always following the Pshat, and always the first Pshat over the Medrash, when Pshat is difficult, he will bring the Medrash as well. In this case, Rashi actually brings the Midrashic explanation first. And Rashi reads as follows. Tfadea achas haiso, there was one frog that came out. And the machine was hit it. He matezat nechinim nechinim, and swarms of frogs, streams of frogs, would come out of this particular frog. So when it came out, batalat tfadea, it was one singular frog. Now the stipler asked the following question. If one frog came out, and the machine saw as they were hitting it, there more frogs came out, why did the machine not stop hitting the frog? Furthermore, what was the purpose of bringing out the makkah in this particular instance? Why would it necessarily bring out the makkah one single frog? Bring out streams and streams of frogs. And I read out the lot on the site that's widely quoted, we have a Mishulchan Gavaya here. In Zemalam Deinu Musa Haskil. This idea teaches us a Musa Haskil al Tivosh from Midas HaKas, about the nature of person who has anger. Shoah Sheroma HaMitzrim. When the Mitzrim saw, he called makkah, Shoah Makkah Mesa Tzvadeim, Hima Tezat Nechinim Shoah Tzvadeim, that every time, as they smoked this frog, there were streams of frogs coming out, Haleya Zasli Senes, logic would dictate. They should stop instantly. What does anger tell you? If hitting it and bringing out frogs, even more than to hit it. But I can't just carry on hitting it. The more frogs will come out of this, that incites the anger even more. But you see from that case, that egg them on to hit it even more. After Kutsa, Kolayat and Shainis Fadim, until the whole land of Shain was covered in frogs. Lamducha, and the purpose of this is to teach you. It's preferable for a person to bypass on his honor. Yishmach HaPosei V'lo Yoshev, he should hear himself being insulted and not respond. And with that, the argument will just disappear. Be'ash Yoshev, Milchomo, Sa'ara, Ve'achshem, Reiseach, Yisiv, Al-Tuvera, Ma'achleches, rather than add oil to the fuel. So idea I think is very easy to relate to in theory, but in practice maybe it's a bit harder, but nonetheless, it's well worthwhile. Now when the Egyptian sorcerer saw this, the prophet tells us, they did the same thing with their witchcraft, and they brought out Tfadim upon the land of Egypt. First of all, the deal is they were unable to bring out such a monster which produced frogs, so they were able to bring out Tfadim and Eretz Mitzrayim upon the land of Egypt. So it's obvious they were bringing out the land of Egypt. So the Mepharshim say that the Medrash says there was an old time border dispute between Mitzrayim and Cush. Where exactly was the border of Egypt? And when the Makkah frogs came, that settled it once and for all. Why? Because not a single frog stepped over the Egyptian border, and it was very clear the delineation between Cush and Egypt. So now, when the sorcerers brought out the frogs, they were doing all they could, they were doing their best to get these frogs to jump over the border. So that would indicate that no, the border is a wider border. So the prophet, no, they were only able to bring it out of Eretz Mitzrayim. And the land of Egypt, even when the sorcerers brought out the things, they were unable to make them step over the border. The Yibayim HaMchaim says the following idea, that the frogs, when Moshe and Aaron brought them forth, jumped into the fire. And Mashon, in something explains, that this is a total unnatural tendency for a frog. Frog is naturally inclined to damp wet places. To jump in the fire shows something totally unnatural to this frog. And the team again, when they brought their chasumim, they said, let's see you do the same thing. But no, once again, by al-Esatfadim, al-Esatfadim, they were only able to do it on the land of Egypt. They couldn't get it to go anywhere else. The next makkah is the makkah of Kinim. It is unique in that we're told here, they tried to imitate it once again, they were unable to. And they were brought to their knees and they were forced to say, we have to admit that this is something beyond the order of nature. Now, why were they unable to do it? So Rashi says, The spirits, have no control of anything which is smaller than a sa'ira, than a body. And therefore they were unable to produce kinim, which are too small for the spirits to have control of. Now the Rishonim, the Iraqi is actually of a midrashic origin, and Dr. Kainim also brings another explanation, also of midrashic origin. And he says that the kinim were masikim bein akaka. That in order to perform kishuf, a person has to be standing on the ground, a person in the air cannot perform kishuf. And since all the dust, all the earth in the shrine was turning to life, they weren't standing on the ground. And therefore, they were unable to do the makkah of kinim. Now, it would seem that these are two different pshatim. However, I once heard a following reconciliation between the two pshatim. So Rashi, earlier on, it was dying post called base, makes the following deal. It says, Vayasu king chayatumi mitzrayim belotehim. So Rashi says, there are two different words used in reference to kishuf. One is lotehim, that's a hey, and one is lohotehim. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin dashes this, that belotehim, without the hey, means master shaden, the work of spirits. Belohotehim, master kishofim. This refers to sorcery. Now the Beit HaLevi and Amr V'Shalach explains, based on the Gemara Sanhedrin, that Shadim has the ability to bring one thing from somewhere else, take something from here elsewhere. For example, if they want to convert blood into water into blood, they can remove the water and bring blood from elsewhere and replace it. However, Kishuf actually transforms one thing into another, or at least perceives, the way we perceive it, transforms it, so it will transform the water into blood. So now, there are two options available to the Egyptian sorcerers. Number one, Lotehim, the Maitre Shadim, and number two, Lotehim, Maitre Kishuf. So now, the Pasuk, by us, actually says, Vayasa came Belotehim, Maitre Shadim. So Rashi, they were unable to do that. Why? Because Ein HaShed Yachol Lishloit Abeya Pachet Mitzvah. The spirit has no control. This refers to Maitre Shadim on the Pasuk. But after Chizkuni, they have another option available to them. They have a different... They have a different technique, technique of kishuf. No, that only works if they're standing on the ground. Now the question has been asked that why were the Egyptian sorcerers forced to admit we can't do it and it must be Hashem at work here. Maybe the reason why they were unable to do it is because they weren't standing on the ground. Had they been standing on the ground, they would be able to do it. They kishuf. Moshe and Aaron, when they did it, they weren't standing on the ground. And I want to follow the following answer, which I think is correct. That if Moshe and Aaron were to have performed this through kishuf and to transform the dust into kinim to kishuf, and they weren't really kinim, then they would have had the property of standing on the ground, because these aren't real kinim; these are really earth which look like kinim, and therefore they wouldn't have stopped the sorcerers from doing kishuf. If they were stopped from doing kishuf because they weren't standing on the ground, that's why these are real kinim. This is the real thing. And with this idea, I think we can answer. The Zayis Ra'anon, the Mogan Avraham, his first Yaakov Shmoi, has comments called the Zayis Ra'anon. And he raises the following question. Yaakov Shmoi tells us that in the Makkah of Kinim, Yud Dalet Mine Kinim Hoyu Shom, there are 14 species of different life. Upoka Shelahem Hoyu Kebet Sot Shatan Nagoyas. There are 14 different species of life brought upon the Egyptians, and the smallest of which was the size of a Bet Sot Shatan Nagoyas, an egg of a chicken. Now we all know that an egg of a chicken is much bigger than a Sa'ir or a Adosha. So what's going on here? ask Mogan Avraham. The Yaakov Shemayni himself is the one who says that the reason why he doesn't do it is because Eimach Shein Yochel Nishtoi Abayda Bachat Mikasayla. The reason why he couldn't do it is because it was too small. But you tell me 1 minute. They're big things. They're humongous creatures, these things. So what's going on here? Now I think with this idea we can answer it, because when Moshe and Aaron produced the light, what they actually did was they took the dust from Mitzrayim and they converted it into kinim. They converted it into these huge, humongous lights which don't exist anywhere else. Now that option wasn't available to them because they couldn't do kinim because they weren't standing on the ground. The only option available to them was to bring kinim from elsewhere. And kinim elsewhere don't exist in that size. Kinim elsewhere exists on a normal kinim. On that, ain't that shame? Yachal Yishleit, Abay Yipach Mitzrayim. The next in the Makkah of Oriv, it's told that as follows, Moshe Rabbeinu described to Pai as follows, he doesn't send away the nation. I'm going to send Oriv, and what about the time of Oriv, and this Oriv is going to fill the heads of Egypt, and also the earth from which they stand. Now the phrase, the Baalei Pshat explain it in one way, two ways rather. Either it means, and the houses upon, and the earth upon which the houses stand will also be turned into wild animals. Yeah, the Torah says that no place will be safe, even within the house will not be safe, because the houses upon, even the earth upon which the houses stand will turn into Nechoshim and Akrovim. Or it means the earth on which the Mitzrayim are, even if they're uninhabited by houses, the Gama Adama Shem Alev, that earth which the Mitzrayim are upon will be turned into Oriv. However, the Baalei Drish take this one step further. Many of them say, quote, one of them particularly is the Shein Nevil Nagon. There is an animal mentioned in Sechus Kilayim, Mishnah Kilayim, called Adini HaSodet. Now this animal is attached to the ground from a cord by its belly button. Now if you detach the cord, this animal on the ground, the animal will die. Now the Rishon wanted to bring this animal to Mitzrayim to plague the Egyptians as well. But how do you bring such an animal to Egypt? If you detach it from the ground, it's going to die. He brought the Gama Adama Hashem Aleh, brought the earth together with it. The Avraham Mefarshim also follow a similar line. I quote here the topic of Paneah, simply because he's so concise, I quote the whole comment here, it's written down the whole comment. His comment is as follows, three words and two Rambam claimants. Ein chai gadela, p'sachim daf min beis om beis ayin shom, um yisham yishviyas. And that's an arichus for the Rambam Chavah. And the comment is, if you look at the Gemara in Pesachim Daf Nun Beis, actually reads, "In Chaya Shev Yehuda, G'day La'Apeir Shev Gadol." An animal whose territory is Yehuda will not normally feed on Peiros of a land which is out of its territory. An animal, when it's on home territory, behaves differently to an animal when it's on its own. When on home territory, the animal is different. It's more vicious. It feeds better. It's, so therefore, the Gama Adam Asim Alel was necessary to bring the territory of the animal together with it. In fact, if you want to know why the Makkah of Oriv is called Oriv, why is the Makkah of Oriv called Oriv? What does Oriv mean? Oriv doesn't mean wild animals. Oriv means, to Rashi, a mixture, a ruvya. A mixture of wild beasts. In this case, it happens to be wild beasts. Oriv means a mixture. Why is the Makkah of Oriv called Oriv? So if a single species of animals were to come and attack, one could say perhaps, it happens. It happens on occasion for a group of animals to attack a village or to attack a tent. But if a mixture of wild animals come, and each animal comes with its own environment, I mean, no, the environment of one animal is not the same. The Siberian tiger lives in a different climate to the African rhino. If every animal is to come, but if Adam Asim Alel, together with its own environment, in a mixture, then that's a necessary tree shows Yal Hashem. And therefore, it's appropriate to call the Makkah of Oriv, Oriv.
That's like the violation of Laitu the two.
Right, correct. The important quote that by Elisha, the one tells us that the bears came in with the forest to show that they were particularly vicious. Right, the important quote that. Now, in the pasuk of Devar, when the pasuk tells us in the aftermath of Devar, after the Egyptian animals were wiped out, say by Yomas coming in Mitzrayim, when we made Israel, they made the echo. This is pasuk Vav that. None of the animals of the none of the Jewish animals died. Not a single one. It's positive sign. We used to have Pari. Pari sent out his messages. You know, let me make sure I'll add Echod. None of the Jewish animals have died, but Yichlo, they parried Lishlechus on. Now, there's a few points here which are raised by the Mephoshim. Number one, there's a difference in Lashon between Pasuk Vav and Pasuk Zayin. Pasuk Vav, Lo Yimeis Echod, not a single one died. Pasuk Zayin, Lo Yimeis Mishol Ad Echod. Secondly, the end of Pasuk Zayin says, Vayichlo, they parried, and parried's heart was hardened, but Lishlechus on. It would seem from the juxtaposition of the pasuk that this follows on. He sent out messages. There wasn't one animal that died, and then his heart was hardened. The choyer, that would be a reason that paket. So there's very pshat in here. One rather ingenious pshat from Al Diskin. First, the Pasuk Yetzir. The Pasuk Yetzir is saying the Shem and Amoyu. Others say the following Pshat. The Pasuk Amoyu, we are told, there was a person who was a Ben Ishmit tree. And he went out and he had an argument, and he was starting the Kalal Hashem. Now, who was his Ben Ishmit tree? His mother was a Jew, and his father was a non-Jew. Now, they're saying the Balei Tosfos explain that this view was centered on what is this person's nichus. But normally we know Akum Evel Avol Lachisol. If the Jewish, the mother is Jewish, even the father is a Goy, child is a Yid. By Goyim, you go by the father. Now, before Matan Torah, they argued that this fellow had the status of a Goy because he followed the father. The din of Evel Avol Lachisol hadn't yet taken to effect. Therefore, this fellow, whose father was a Mitzri, his mother was a Goy, was in fact a Goy and had to undergo a Geirus. And he lost the argument, and that's why. And that's why he went out and he ended up being Mekel. So, the volume say that, you see by the Medrash says, in Pasuk Shalach, when by Kriyas Yamsu, it's told of, Lo Yimisha Bahem Ad Echot. So it says, none were remaining, Ad Echot, until the last one. So the Medrash says, Ad Echot, that means there was one yet remaining, and who was that? That was Pari. Pari was left, it stayed with Kriyas Yamsu, in order to say, Yichu Bechavidim Hashem. But the point is, the word Ad Echot is used by the Medrash to mean up to the last one, and the last one was left remaining. So it says as follows, the heir of all the Jewish animals, there wasn't one back. But when Pari sent out his messengers, he found there was one fellow who Pari considered to be a Yid, and that was this fellow whose mother was a Yid, and his father was a Goy. And his animals had taka died. Ah, we see that the mystery animals are also dying. We see the Yid's animals are also dying. And therefore it follows on. And then, there are the other Pari. Once again, obviously there's not an explanation. All the other Egyptians' animals were dying. And all the other Yidus didn't die. There's one person who's an exception. Obviously, that doesn't justify it. But again, Pari catching on that straw by Yichla Le Pari. There's a rather ingenious shot of the Maral Diskin. And he says as follows. He says, we can assume that the Yidin in Mitzrayim had to pay a tax of all the animals. Now, he says, let us assume, for example, that the tax on the animals, which animals, one out of every 10 animals had to be given to Pari. So now let's imagine the following scenario. Yid has 10 animals, so he has to give one to Pari. Now one of his animals in the plague of Deva will die. Now he only has 9 animals, he doesn't have to give any to Pari. So who suffered the losses? Only Pari suffered the losses. Now this only works for someone's borderline. He has 10 animals, he has 20 animals, but when one animal dies, he's going to change his bracket. Until now, you have to give two. If you have 20 animals, for example, until now you have to give two. If one animal dies, then you've got 19, you have to give one animal. If someone has 22, 23, 24, etc., if one animal dies, that will sustain a loss to the Eve, because you haven't changed his bracket, so that's to give the tax to Pari. So it says as follows. The Bnei Yisrael, that she, animals, none of them suffered the loss. None of them died. But he said Pari. But when Pari sent around his message to see what's going on, let's do a total, let's see what the tax is. Up to one did die. There was one animal. They found one animal here and there that had died in order that Pari would sustain that loss. Once again, that was the cause for Pari. These unfortunately don't understand the word Ad Echot means there was one that did die. The Hanidola takes the word Ad Echot in a different context and he says Ad Echot can mean even one, even less than one animal didn't die. So for example, what would be if a Yid had rented the animal from an Egyptian, or he had bought the milk from a cow, an Egyptian cow. Now, if this animal were to die, the Yidden would sustain a loss because he's already paid for it. So therefore, even less than one animal didn't die. Even Ad Echad. Now, I have a point to make on this. And I think it follows. Rashi says in B'Shalach, when the machine harnessed their animals, Rashi brings the same in the Medrash. Well, where did they get the animals from? They all died. They all died in the desert, in the boat. So this was, these animals that the machine used to chase after them back to the Yitzhak were from Yorei Dvar Hashem. Those who feed the words of Hashem brought the animals into the house. They didn't die during the desert. And therefore concludes Rav Shimon Ben Mikan, Toyim Shem Mitzri Harung. Even we can see what even the best of the Egyptians were like. Now, according to the Hamik Dover, I don't think this would be a question. The question is, where did they get animals from? The answer is, there were Egyptian animals that didn't die. Had they rented them out to eat? Had they sold the milk to eat? So in order that Egypt has seen a loss, the Egyptian animals didn't die. So we don't see necessarily that going to Hashem. However, I have to say that if we look at the Medrash on the Pasuk Ad Echad, the Medrash says, even less than one, for example, Behemo Chetzieho Shel Mitzri, Chetzieho Shel Yisrael, even if it was half owned, they owned the partnership, Behemo, that animal didn't die, even less than one animal didn't die. Now on the Medrash, I don't think the Kasha would be a Kasha, because what would happen to a part owned animal when he went down the stream? Either you buy me out, I buy you out. And presumably the machine weren't in a position to buy them out, so they would get bought out. Just running out of time, so I'm going to skip to Makas B'Choyrus. The rather fascinating writer, which is quoted, well known, extensively quoted by the different portions, at the end of Sechel Avodah Zarah, the Masechet Ketanos, beginning of Masechet Smachos, an introduction reads as follows: By he barchati alaylo, by Hashem hiko kol v'choyr eretz Mitzrayim. And it was at chatzis alaylo, midnight, Hashem smote all the Egyptian v'choyr firstborn. But asked the bright star, she nocha posim in Bamidbar, ki li kol v'choyr, by yoyna krisi kol v'choyr. That every v'choyr belongs to Hashem, is in the service of Hashem. Why? Because by Yom HaKosi Kol V'Chol, in the day that I smote all the Egyptian firstborns. So ask the Brisa of Ula, was Makas V'Chol B'Chatzi HaLaila, was it at night? Or was it by Yom? Was it during the day? The Brisa reads as follows, the memory reads as follows, Amav Yechnam, Ava Pisha Yika Yisman Makas Modes, even though they were smitten fatally, Mechatzi HaLaila, Ev Chatzis, Hoso Nashon Nufaseres Behem Ad HaBoikeh, they were lying in death throes until the morning. And by the purpose of this was today Shayu Bonai Bethany, in order that the Yidden weren't allowed out of the house at night to see what's happening to the Egyptians, they were left dying until the day. So indeed, they were smitten at Kafei Salila, but the Makkah was incompleted at daytime, during the daytime. Now the Sefer Zalman Oibach based on this Medrash, there's the following idea. If you look in the biggest Krishma, following Krishma, we notice there's a difference in the Nusach between Shachris and Maariv. If you look in Shachris, you say, Mimitzrayim Gia Atonu Hashem Elokeinu, Mimitzrayim Gia Atonu Hashem Elokeinu, Kol Bochayim Arotso, Uvuchayim Yisrael Goroso. Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, and it's not the first one. First, he takes Mitzrayim, and then we mention Makas Bochayim. Now, if you look in Maariv, what we actually say is, Hamakad Evozi Kol Bochayim Mitzrayim, because Baruch Hu smote the first one, but Yosef, Samuel, Shalom, Dechon, Dechon, Dechon. And then he took them out of the shrine. So he says, what are we talking about? Are we talking about what happened that night? Hamakeh Rosh, the smiting. That took first. That took place first. And then, by Yosef, Samuel, Shalom, Dechon, Dechon, Dechon. So in the daytime, called the Chareim HaRosh, so the actual death, that took place during the day, after the Yidden had come out of the shrine. And therefore, it's appropriate to reverse the order. And in fact, the Achronian, based on this, have a deal. What is the proper time for Pinat Ben? Pinat Ben is done on day 30. Now, the minhag says the shach is that we do Pinat Ben during the day. Pinat Ben is not something I can do during the day, you can do it at night, but the minhag is during the daytime. So, there's various reasons given by the Mephoshim. Why should we do it at day? Now, the Yaitis in the Siddur says, so it seems to me, on the contrary, it's more appropriate to do it at night. The reason why we do Pinat Ben is because they were saved from Makas B'Choyos. Makas B'Choyos took place at night. Therefore, we doubt we should do it by night. Send the truth to Hashem. No. Based on this, had done on Mitzvah Smachos, We know we have a principle that we only say Shiur on the Gemara Nes when the Nes is completed, and the Nes is only completed during the daytime. And therefore that explains the minhag that we only do Bidin HaBen during the day. Now I would add on my own addendum that we follow a certain Zaman Oyabach explanation that would support the Maharsham. Why? Because during Shachas you say, Minasan Yavon, Kaba Chayim Arokta, or the Chaycha Yisrael Ga'okta. And you say the first one of the Eden. In Maharsham there's no mention of the Chaycha Yisrael Ga'okta. Because that's only during the day when the Nes is completed, then we say, the Chaycha Yisrael Ga'okta. Furthermore, today, actually has to be Taras Bukhayim. It's the first form fast to commemorate the fact that they were saved from time to Bukhayim, they were in danger. Really, it should be tomorrow, but we can't fast Yom Tov, so we fast Yud Dalet Erev Pesach instead. Those most people know to hear assume. Now the question is, if Makkos Bukhayim again took place at night, the Chayim of the fast should be at night. And once again, with this explanation, this explains why we fast during the day. Now, Shus Yaakov was asked a funny question. The minhag is, if someone has a child who's a Bukhayim, will fast on behalf of his child if he doesn't hear a Siyam. And he says, someone asked Shus Yaakov the following question. I have a son who was born to me on the night of Erev Pesach, Leil Yud Dalet. Do I have to fast Tanis Bukhayim or not? Says the Shus Yaakov, it would seem to me that it depends. Was he born before Chatzos, or was he born after Chatzos? If he was born before Chatzos, so then all the Bukhayim who were around before Chatzos, they were in danger. If he was born after Chatzos, those Bukhayim were never killed. I'll bring you a Ketas Raya, he says, that the Bukhayim were around after Chatzos weren't killed. Because the bride said, being of the Mesechus Machos, that's after Stira. Was Machos Bukhayim that day, at Chatzos Alayla, or was it during the day? So I can say a simple tarot. Those Bukhayim who were around at Chatzos, we killed that Chatzos, and those who were born after that were killed by Yom the following day. What's the problem? Elamai, since the Hagdamah does not give this following that parrot, right? So those who were born after Chatzos Halayla were not were saved and were not killed. And therefore he says it would seem to me that it would depend on when the child was born. To me the idea is a bit of a parrot, because the fact that he fast on the 14th doesn't mean that's when the Makkah took place. Makkah took place on the night of the 15th. We're just not able to fast on that day, that's why any Bukhayim was born on the night of the 14th, whether it's before Chatzos or after Chatzos, would be in danger. And nonetheless, he seems to say that the day of the 14th is in place of the 15th, and therefore we give the same attribute. And therefore, based on that, he forgives the following stack. Nu, v'nissan nigalu, v'nissan asim nigo, may all be zecha, v'hir v'yameinu, tibiyat gel tzedek, v'yabrikakom Pesach, v'yitzvesti.